Today's show is sponsored by Bob's Red Mill, employee-owned and operated, and founded on the principle of good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country, to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now.
Welcome to the Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. Our guest is Gabriella Macari from Macari Vineyards on the North Fork in Mattituck on Long Island. We'll talk to Gabriella about Long Island wines and Macari Vineyards. We'll taste the Sauvignon Blanc. We'll taste... What did you bring in?
Cab
Franc, because originally it was a Syrah. She pulled a quick one on me, and we may even try something else. I'm your host, Sam Ben Ruby. Stay with us for the Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. Gabriella Macari grew up around wine, not in France, not in Napa, but on the North Fork of Long Island. She has worked at the family vineyard, Macari Vineyards, since 1995-ish. She is responsible for the winery's marketing, distribution, education, and gets down in the cellar and helps with winemaking. She's a certified sommelier and holds a level 4 diploma in wine and spirits from the WSET. Gabriella completed the wine executive program at the UC Davis Grad School of Management, and she is currently studying for her MW, her Master's of Wine. Is that what it stands for?
Mm-hmm.
Since 2016, so you're a year into this. All right, welcome to the show, Gabriella. Excited to have you here. I want to talk to you about your family, Long Island wines. So what I want to do is I want to get into a few things with you. I want to get into your background because you have an interesting background. I want to talk to you about Long Island wines. I want you to lay a little knowledge on our listeners. And then I want to talk about Macari, which is one of the reasons I asked you to come. I'm interested in Macari. So let's work it in those compartments.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So first, let's talk about you. Let's talk about your journey in life and wine that got you to where you are now, which is at Macari Vineyards, the family vineyard.
Sure.
So tell me how you got there, all the stuff you did, what you're doing now.
Sure. So I grew up, my mom's family's from Argentina and Spain, and my dad's family's from Italy. And so I grew up with wine on the dinner table. We were adding club soda to wine as kids. And I think it was very, just a very immersive and just casual kind of like European childhood. And my grandfather always said that wine brings people together. He had an old potato
Whose
farm.
Whose father? Argentinian or Italian?
So my Italian grandfather.
Okay. So he was probably making wine.
So he was making wine in his basement in Corona, Queens during the Depression and just grew up making wine from whatever he could find. So when they couldn't afford fruit, he would make dandelion wine and sell it in the park in
wow.
Corona. So he has this sort of really emotional connection to winemaking and wine. And when he worked in real estate and decided to buy a farm on the North Fork when nobody wanted to be on the North Fork. And we planted, so I was immersed.
So he was in the real estate business.
Correct.
So he had some sense that there was all this land out
right.
there. But it was the middle of nowhere.
Nowhere.
And it was literally potato farm.
Mm-hmm.
So he decided...
He decided to buy an old potato farm with a potato barn and 500 acres. It's waterfront, which he saw the value in that from that perspective. Never really thinking to plant vines, but once the industry started picking up in the early 80s, and I would say more, probably even more late 80s, early 90s, he was just like, let's do this. And
so the original parcel he bought, he didn't add on. He bought this big parcel,
right.
and it's still
yeah, it's
there.
Still there.
It's crazy.
Exactly. And, you know, we've added on.
So your dad grew up.
My dad grew up in Queens. Yeah.
In
so my
Queens.
Dad was working in construction and real estate. My mom's an RN, and completely changed their lives and
so
started planting.
So I just have to, in my mind, mm-hmm. when your grandfather bought the farm, how old was your dad?
Oh, wow. I don't know.
Was he a young adult? He was working already?
Yeah, he was
already,
probably
or?
In his early 40s.
Okay, so he was a grown. He wasn't,
yeah.
you know, you're a late teenager.
No, yeah.
Live here. Okay.
Oh, when he bought the farm or when he converted
when
to a winery.
When your grandfather bought
oh, sorry.
The farm. Your dad
so, yeah,
was,
my aunts and my father were young. Yeah, so they would,
okay,
they
so
would
they,
come visit the farm and
okay,
camp
cool.
out and stuff. Yeah, sorry.
All right, so now your grandfather gets out there and not right away, but he starts growing... planting and growing grapes.
Right. So sort of tasting wine from the region, realizing the quality and having this nostalgic emotional connection to wine and winemaking and saying, you know, let's do this. And he always has this idea of passing on something to the next generation. And that was his goal, was just to pass a business on that was, you know, important to him. And so we planted a lot of vines. Cornell at the time, you know, was telling us to plant a lot of Merlot and a lot of Chardonnay because they're easy to grow and they were doing. You know,
they were not indigenous, but
right.
they were easy to grow.
Exactly,
so
no hybrids. Yeah, we're using vinifera, and so we realized the quality potential for sure. But my brothers and I were
so wait,
super
fill in
young.
A gap for
sure,
me.
Sorry, I keep skipping.
No. So your grandfather's out there.
Okay.
Your dad eventually moves out there, or he grew up there?
No, so, yeah, my parents moved out.
They moved out
out of Queens.
And mm-hmm. they decided to get into the winemaking business.
Exactly, yeah.
Because a fair thing to say is Macari is a Long Island wine family that's been out there as long as anyone, but they weren't the first to make wines on Long Island.
Right, no, we're
right?
not the first, no.
Right.
Yeah, the Hargraves were making wine in the
right.
70s.
Mid-70s, mm-hmm. okay.
And so...
So when do you jump into all of this? We're back to you now.
In regards to wine, I guess.
Yeah.
Just like, we always joke, we're like, child labor? like, no, but my brothers and I were just really immersed in everything from when we started. And I have memories of being at the winery on a school night, you know, at 11 p.m. watching the pump overs. And I was very illegal behind the bar. For sure, pouring wine at like
so
12
you were
years
a high
old.
Schooler?
Yeah, for sure.
You were like a mid-teen
yeah,
or something.
And serving wine and pretending to be 18, which hopefully no one's listening from.
So you were involved with everything.
Mm-hmm.
You were thrown into the fire.
We were all, yeah. I guess my brothers and I. My brother grew up sort of like he knows the vineyard like the back of his palm. He grew up in between the vines, and now he's our vineyard manager. And we all grew up with this sort of farming background. So we
did you like it or like you had to do it because it's family and
sure.
you resented a little or it felt good to you?
Yeah, I loved it. And there was a point where I was like, okay, my parents were like, you can do whatever you want with your life, where you don't have to work here. And when I stepped away and went to college, I realized I miss it so much. I miss being outside. I miss being in a farm. And I realized how much people were curious about wine in general. So people, oh, where are you from? North Fork. Oh, what do you do? Whatever.
You had to get outside
right.
to realize inside was kind of
like,
cool,
oh,
right?
Oh, it's kind of cool. Yeah, I can tell people about winemaking and viticulture. And people are, I think now more than ever, really curious about that.
Yes.
And so it's a really good time. So in college,
you finish high school, work on the family farm, do every job, winery. You go to college, you go to Fordham, so you don't go far away.
Right.
Live at Fordham.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you'd come back every now and then, help, summer's off, all of that stuff. So you finish, and are you as involved college years at the winery as you could be?
Yes.
I mean, I realize you're in classes, semesters.
In the summer, for sure, and I would do events all the time in the city. So my mom would call me and be like, hey, there's a tasting. Do you have class? Can you do it? So I would do the tastings.
So you'd start becoming
come back on weekends.
Brand ambassador in a way.
I'd bring people out. The president of our university was like, oh, I love wine. You know, and he came out. He blessed the vineyard. And I'd a crazy group of friends that just loved coming out and hanging out on on the farm. So
and they probably knew nothing about
it. Right, and now they have this great appreciation, which is, I mean, the closeness to New York City and the Bronx and Brooklyn is unbelievable. We're really lucky.
You finish college, you stay involved with the winery. You get like the head priest guy at Fordham to bless the vineyards, right? Then you finish college.
It was an honor, yeah.
What happens?
So I finished college, and I actually finished early and applied randomly for this job in marketing and public relations in the wine and spirits business. And I knew that I wanted to stay in that world, but I knew that I couldn't just go back. So I realized that I wanted to just learn as much as I could so that I can bring that knowledge back to my family. So I started working at a boutique PR firm for three and a half, four years.
Wow.
And so we represented Moët, all their wine brands. We represented, my big project was Ribera del Duero. So we managed their
Spanish
wines. Mm-hmm, we managed their campaign supported by the EU and the U.S., which was incredible. I mean, we went to San Francisco and L.A. and Chicago and Florida, learned about distribution.
Spanish wines still don't get their due, and they're great.
Did
you feel that then?
No, I still do.
Yeah, they're not there yet. And you could relate to that a little with Long Island, too.
For sure.
So you do that, you gain a great body of experience, mm-hmm. I would imagine, right?
For sure.
So you leave there, and what happens?
I quit in 2012 and went to Champagne.
Champagne, so, France.
Yeah.
To what, work
I did a
harvest
little,
or
I had
intern?
Adrian Chalk set me up. He's an importer. He's a brilliant importer, and he set me up with a petite stage in Champagne. And
what is that, a petite stage?
Well, it was just like a small little internship.
It
was, 2 weeks. And I wanted to work. I wanted to get dirty and get out in the vineyard. And they were like, sort of like, okay, here's your internship. Drink this champagne. It's 8 a.m. Like, no, I want to work. But I learned so much. Met so many amazing
people. Your family
people.
Was okay with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you're already, your own person by now.
Right, right. And it was eye-opening. And, I was able to sort of step back from that experience and bring that to my family.
So you come back from Champagne. And then what, you jump into the winery?
I jumped into distribution and sort of started hitting up restaurants and visiting. And that's sort of where I decided to take the education forward, was because I realized I didn't know as much as all these sommeliers I was speaking to. And I really wanted to understand what they were saying and understand acidity and tannin and why certain things happen and winemaking. And so I really took the WSET seriously at that time, and then I also just visited people and called and
kind
of
immersed yourself into the world. So you got a level 4 certification. How long did that take?
The actual diploma took about a year and a half
of intensive study.
Intense, mm-hmm.
Like,
but it's
nights home and
for sure.
Head in the book.
Mm-hmm. And really. It's beautiful because I love to learn, and I think that you should never stay stagnant. I think even people that have degrees and certifications still need to.
But most
continue.
People who do what you do don't have the curiosity or the need to know that much more.
Right.
I mean, you did. You were compelled to immerse yourself into it, which is a great thing. I mean, you gave yourself a pretty good background in a lot of good ways. I said in your intro that you went to UC Davis. When did that come about?
So that was actually just an executive program that my brother and I did. It was a really intense immersion into sort of like the business and the trends of what's happening what was happening at that point. And we met really, incredible winemakers and a lot of brand representatives that were talking about trends in the business. And it was fascascinating to learn about what Dr. Andy Walker is doing out there and studying vines.
That's the school for
it's amazing the
wine.
Research.
Yeah,
I mean, he's breeding for disease resistant vines right now. It's unbelievable,
crazy.
And that was an incredible experience.
When was that?
I would think that was like 2013
okay.
or something.
So what happens after that?
So, I mean, I guess I just really immersed myself in New York City and we've started just doing a lot of tasting and meeting people, and we get tremendous support from awesome restaurants, and that was just like a huge, I mean, people, we always had people supporting us, but we really increased our direct-to-trade sales, and that was just, is so humbling, and we're so appreciative still to this day for people supporting us.
I think about it, you know, as like a wine aficionado, a foodie and all that, you know, somebody who goes to restaurants, you know, it's been, I wouldn't say a long haul, but a steady haul for Long Island mm-hmm. wines to get placed in restaurants and the recognition. I mean, was it hard work to twist some arms?
I think, I mean, I never had to twist an arm. There was absolutely rejection, of course. But I think that once I got the appointment and the wine was in the glass, people were blown away. And to this day, like if you know, you meet someone and put the wine in the glass, I think they're really pleasantly surprised.
Right. Who better than a family member?
Right.
You know, where the heart and soul of the family goes into the wine and you present it to a restaurant. Plus, I think they feel a loyalty to supporting.
If the quality is there. I mean, some people wouldn't do it if there was no quality, but
it's there. Yeah, I'm sure some mm-hmm. Long Island people make wines that suck and they've been shown the door, you know. So, all right. So then we're getting close to now.
To now.
Then you decide to go after the highest certification in wine.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
About a year ago or so, right? The MW, the Master of Wine. Tell us a little about that. We've had people on who have it, mm-hmm. but just, you know, tell
sure.
us.
Sure. Yeah, it's just sort of a, it was a natural progression for me, and I was really inspired by, my father's really good friends with Lisa Granick. She's a master of wine,
right.
and she's brilliant, and she's been a champion of our wines, and she's been visiting for probably 18 years
really?
And telling us what she thinks we should do, and her feedback has been so incredible, and I've always looked up to her, and I think, you know, the MW just seemed like a very faraway challenge, and then I finished
the
diploma.
Does she hold an MW?
Mm-hmm. I finished the diploma, and I was like, what else can I do to learn more? And so she wrote my recommendation letter, and I didn't think I'd be accepted, and they accepted me. And you know what?
This is one of the hardest tests of tests. Forget wine.
It's really ridiculous, but the journey to even being able to sit the exam is really beautiful because it's humbling. And
so where are you at in the process?
So just finished stage one. I took the exam.
It's a written exam?
This June 5th.
And that's
written.
How many stages do you have to go through?
So if, the second stage is they're very aptly named stage two. And so it's 4 days of tasting and 12 flights, 12 wine flights. And,
all blind. You have to identify.
Yeah.
So you're in the process now of tasting everything that's
every
not
day.
Nailed down
mm-hmm.
every day.
Yeah.
And you pass the written part.
So I won't find out. Yeah.
You don't know
yet?
It was
written and tasting. I won't find out until next month.
Okay. And then is there a third stage?
Sure, yes.
Service?
The third stage, if you pass that four-day torture.
The tasting torture? Mm-hmm.
Tasting okay. and essay torture. The last stage is research paper. So you have to define pick a topic and write a research paper on it.
So even if you don't, you can go back and do
exactly.
it again, right?
Right?
I mean, it could take some people a few years.
Oh,
some
people,
their story, six, eight, nine.
A lot.
Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, if it never happens, it's all, it's
the
fun.
Knowledge
the
gained.
Knowledge is, exactly.
You'll do it. Trust me, you'll do it. All right, so that's you up until now, and currently you're focused on the family winery.
Mm-hmm.
You handle, let's talk about all the different hats you wear.
You know, we're a team, and it's funny, like, every time I try to describe my title, it's really, there is none, and we're all hands on deck all the time.
Right.
But I oversee distribution, and I oversee, you know, the big thing for us right now is tasting room, and we're really trying to increase hospitality and increase experience, and exactly, so there's, you know, a lot of that happening, a lot of tasting room experience changes, and I mean, in the cellar.
I met you at a trade tasting.
Right.
You know, where there were retailers,
yep.
journalists, restaurants, and you've done a bunch of those.
Oh, yeah.
The
mm-hmm.
first part of the year. Now you're out at the tasting room. You're in season now.
For sure.
Right? And I saw in a few different places, I wouldn't use the word metal, but you're involved with the winemaking process.
But Kelly Koch is our head winemaker. She's unbelievable.
She's been with you for years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so since 2010. We're so lucky. And, you know, her and I were friends, actually. We played volleyball on the beach together before she was our winemaker. And she's part of the family. And I've learned so much from her. And it's so fun to be down there. I mean, in 2013, my dad and I were drinking a lot of Côte Rôti. And we were like, we want to do something with
Syrah?
This Viognier. Yeah, so it's Syrah, but we co-fermented a little bit of Viognier. Kelly's like, that's awesome. You know, and we're really... always bouncing ideas off each other, and she's so willing to experiment but still like maintain that really focused quality all the time.
And I know you would like to know about that part of the business because it's the family business, but do you envision yourself one day making wines? Or
I think collaborating is the most beautiful thing, and I think that I think that if you're representing your wine, like, you have to understand
right.
what pH
I, that
is.
Part I get. Mm-hmm.
You know, you
but
have
you
to,
may be driven yeah. to, like, you know, I want my own cuvier
right.
or whatever.
No, I think, you know, the beauty well, is,
time
is
will
collaboration.
Tell on that, but you yeah. want the knowledge and the on-hand experience.
Right, of course.
All right, so that's Gabriella up until the present. Now, the other thing I want Gabriella to talk about is, from her perspective, I want you to talk to me about Long Island wine history, mm-hmm. wines in Long Island. You don't have to get too nerdy, too deep. The good news is, and I'll set it up a little, the Long Island wine making industry really started in the mid-70s. You had mentioned the family's name. What was it, Hargrave?
Mm-hmm, 73, yeah.
And then I think there was the Mudd family after. Mm-hmm. They were now wine consultants. And then little by little, people started buying land. Some famous people came in. And I think, what, in the last 5-10 years, it's popped even more?
Sure.
So where do we start? There's the North Fork of Long Island, where the majority of wineries are.
Mm-hmm.
Why were people attracted to, like, your grandfather? It's a potato farm.
Right.
Who told him he could grow wine there? Why did that happen?
You know, he didn't even know. I think he bought that as a real estate investment. And when he saw other people actually, you know, making high quality wines, he was like, okay, let's do this. And there were consultants brought in from Bordeaux and people coming to visit that were affirming. You know, Richard Smart came and said, these are some of the best soils I've ever seen, and things like that. And he realized that there was potential there.
So let's talk about the soil for a second.
Sure.
I would guess, because it's a long strip on the Sound on one side, and then, you know, the fork and all of that. What is the soil?
So it's super, you know, we actually had a soil scientist visiting from Australia. His daughter was interning with us, and he said, he did an analysis, and he was, like, blown away. We have really geologically young soils, and that's interesting and exciting. But the biggest thing,
when you say that, there's vineyards in France,
right.
Ancient volcanic
Australia,
plate.
Yeah.
Right. So this is a relatively young soil.
Exactly.
What's the composition?
And so there's a ton of sand and
sandy,
loam
naturally.
And exactly mix of, we have like a mix of clay as well. But the sand is in our vineyard in particular because our property faces a Long Island Sound. There's amazing drainage. So if it ever rains,
sand,
I mean, it rained
drainage.
Yesterday,
right.
And then I drove on the vineyard, and I didn't even hit any I didn't hit any mud, you
it's
know?
Crazy.
And that's why we can produce the fruit that we produce.
So when you dig, if you dig in Napa or you dig in France, you'll hit limestone,
right.
pebbles.
Yeah.
You dig there, it's very sandy and loamy.
Sandy, loamy.
Like a foot
mm-hmm.
down.
Yeah, there's
foot.
Bedrock, yeah, but it's,
they
yeah.
compare it to the French Bordeaux region
mm-hmm.
of Graves.
Right.
You know, there's a similar sandy loamy there.
Yep.
All right, so let's talk about the other thing, weather.
The climate, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that doesn't sound like an easy deal.
No, it's funny, like, everyone thinks winemaking is so glamorous and viticulture can be so glamorous, but you're a farmer. And
right.
And people
product.
Forget that. And we are faced with, on the North Fork specifically, faced with severe challenges in every day. There's tons of disease pressure. There's a lot of a
why
lot
is
of
there disease
humidity
pressure? And humidity causes
it can
mold.
Cause downy, powdery. You know, it could support
right.
downy and powdery. And
is that the grape, the leaves,
mildew.
And the vines? It
sure,
affects
yeah,
all
rot.
Of that?
And you don't want a humid vine at the end of the day.
So you're automatically in a more challenging wine growing area because of the geography between the sound and the ocean and the forks and all of that.
But because of the geography, we are blessed with these incredibly moderate seasons. And that's something that everybody that comes to visit our farm in particular steps out. We drive back to the waterfront, and you are literally facing the Connecticut, and you see the Long Island Sound, and that there's a wind that blows from the bluff, and it keeps our vineyard drier than other sites, and cool, and that cool
there's
climate,
all these
viticulture,
microclimates,
exactly,
right?
Meso, exactly. There's all these, and it, basically the viticulture, I think in our vineyard specifically, is really special.
Really, you're in a good spot. So when you talked about disease, the mildew from the humidity. There's the old Napa disease killer, phylloxera. Was that an issue in Long Island?
Not to my knowledge. And, you know, we had some, like, aerial, like, some version of phylloxera that was a threat. But we, you know, I think our plant material is good. And we buy from nurseries, and we know, you know what you're getting. And we never really had any threat.
When you buy from nurseries, do you buy all over the country or local?
You know, Herman Wehmer just, they do a really good job.
Like,
and then,
Riesling,
of course, California.
Whatever. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you will bring in stock from California, upstate, and all of that. It's crazy. All right, so let's talk about the fruit, the grapes. I don't know if there's anything indigenous to the area, but there are grapes that grow well or better than others. Mm-hmm. So what kind of started out? I know you guys have a million varietals, and we'll get into that a little later.
Yep.
But I know for a fact, and correct me if I'm wrong, most of the plantings is Chardonnay.
There's a large amount of Chardonnay Merlot planted, and Cornell University, you know, did studies and said plant this because, you know, they're both easy to grow. And we knew we'd be faced with this humidity issue. And
you told me that offline when you started, that Chardonnay and Merlot, because that's what everyone said. So I guess everyone got an early start, and that's why there's more of that.
Right.
And what evolved?
Since then, you know, Cabernet, obviously the blending people compared us to Bordeaux, so the blending grapes, you know, Cab Franc, Cab Sauv, Malbec, Petit Verdot. So we have all of the grapes planted from Bordeaux, and my father fell in love with Cabernet Franc, and, you know, when people
more
weren't
than other
making,
vineyards.
Exactly. You know, in the beginning, there were a couple people making 100% Cab Franc, and my father
was
always like...
But he was a cheerleader
for
and followed
sure.
through.
Yeah, he loves the Loire Valley, and he really... just wanted to, like, he loved it on its own, you know, tasting blind. He was like, this is great on its own.
It's the fourth most planted grape on the island, so it's not like an outlier.
Right.
I mean, Riesling is less, and even Sauv Blanc.
Right.
So grape-wise, it's predominantly Chard, Merlot, Cab Sauvignon, Cab Franc, and like you said, everyone's growing Bordeaux varietals.
Right. And we have, you know, we love Sauvignon Blanc. That's another grape that we think, obviously, like, you want to produce what you can enjoy with food
right.
from the region. So oysters and seafood and local produce and Sauvignon
it
Blanc
makes sense
is
to the area.
Planning. Yeah, pairings. Yeah.
Now, is it that much harder to grow any one particular grape than others, or are you kind of figured it all out?
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, the Syrah is one of my... I brought it. It's one of my favorite. I love the Rhone Valley, and it's... I love Syrah, and it's really hard to grow. There were years before 2010, we put deer fencing up in 2009.
So you met your match.
Yeah, well...
with Syrah.
I don't know.
When you say it's hard, what's hard? I mean,
for example, the Syrah was planted by this forest, and the deer were attacking it every year. And so it always had, like, a light crop and rot. And just, like, sometimes it doesn't set right. Like, the Malbec doesn't set right all the time. It's just, like, every grape has a story. And
that one's more finicky than...
Exactly.
Than
Pinot. Pinot's really difficult to grow. We have a little bit
It's difficult everywhere. It's the most finicky grape.
Exactly.
So with that inconsistent climate and, you know, loamy soil and all of
exactly.
that, it would be tough. We'll talk about specific plantings and varietals when I talk to you about Macari. But what do you think the biggest misconception about Long Island wines is? I mean, you must run into accolades and objections.
Sure.
What are the misconceptions?
I think people, you know, and my biggest thing with wine in general is that it's alive. And you can taste a bottle that that doesn't bring you joy, that may bring someone else joy because the bottle's completely different. And I think that you need to sort of always remember that things evolve and that vintages change. So in 2011 and 2012, we had severe rain. We didn't make red. We didn't make a
tough
season.
We didn't
produce anything.
And wasn't 09 like ideal?
09 was good, but 10 was incredible.
10 was the best year.
Yeah. And, you know, we didn't really put anything out. But, like, if potentially, you know, we have put out wines, you know, in bad years. And that's not representative. You know, we just only put out what we love. And I think that if you had a wine from Long Island maybe 5 years ago that you didn't enjoy, go back. Visit the region.
So the misconception is they've only gotten better.
Only better. It's the best time.
So don't go by. Give it another chance.
And I think that with everything even. Like, I was, you know, skeptical about Argentina. And, you know, you go back and you taste and you're like, oh, wow, there's some really incredible stuff.
It's the same with any region that's growing. Well, what do you think you've done to sort of shake that image? Get out to tastings?
Getting the wine. Your slogan, bring wine to the people, right? Like,
right.
I feel like it's like.
Bring wine to the, and that's
exactly
what you personally do. So the way to really get people to understand Long Island wines is to get them to taste it and shake the image of the past
for
and
sure.
all of that. Do you feel that the island as a whole, everybody's starting to make better wines?
For sure. 100%. You know, we are really good friends with a lot of grape growers and a lot of winery owners, and I think that it's better than ever.
Right.
And everyone's on board with quality. Everyone's focused on quality. And, you know, if they're not, they're standing out.
They're serious.
Yeah.
All right. I want to ask you two things, and then let's talk about Macari Vineyard specifically. You know, we're talking about Long Island. We'll plug in Macari. The majority of wineries are on the North Fork. There's a very small handful of wineries on the South Fork.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Wolfer, maybe Duck
Channing's
Rock,
out there.
Channing.
Yeah, Channing's doing a great job.
Chris Tracy's a good winemaker.
Yeah.
What's the difference between the wines? If you took similar varietals but different,
I think it's per, you know,
climate.
The climate's challenging on the South Fork. And
more than by you?
You know, I don't know specifically. I think that the biggest thing is that the barrier to entry in the South Fork is absolutely insane based on real estate.
Real estate.
And so if you want to start a winery in the South Fork, it's incredibly challenging.
Even back in the 70s
and when
your grandfather bought, nobody was buying stuff on the South Fork
for
and saying, let's.
Right.
So that's why everyone settled there.
Right.
But can you, if I blind tasted a red from the South and the North, can you
no.
really?
So
there's nothing
I
major
can.
There.
No.
All right. Last thing is tell me about, and I think this is important to Long Island wineries and important to Macari. There's this word I keep coming across called agritainment. Tourism is important to
for
any
sure.
wine region, Napa,
absolutely.
Bordeaux, and all that. What's agritainment out on Long Island?
Well, it's funny you say. I mean, I tell people this all the time. My family and I are very honest. My mom's always really honest. My dad's really honest with what he does and his philosophy. And I think that if it wasn't for the people that visit our winery, we wouldn't survive. And we are so thankful. We have a really incredible wine club. And people that come back every year, and they, you know, they get married, and they have these special moments, and have this sort of experience, and that's so beautiful, and that's possible because we're close to a city, and
right.
we have a really unique. I always, everywhere I go, I always try to compare our situation to other situations, and if you go to France, Italy, Spain, Germany. Parts of the old world, they don't have that tourism component. So they're relying on their export markets. And that takes a cut. And that can be incredibly challenging. And we are so lucky.
There's over a million visitors.
It's like it's like 1-3 estimated
a
year. I'd assume 2. You know, it's a lot.
So it's an important component to business.
Exactly.
Exposure. Sales,
for
know,
sure,
all of that stuff. Plus, a lot of the wineries, including yours, have incredible facilities where you could do events and partying
right.
and all of that.
We just launched a private barrel cellar under the Matatuck tasting room, and we did an event there. We did a vertical of Bergen Road, which is one of our Bordeaux blends, and we booked out in like a day.
Yeah,
people are so excited to do anything.
I mean, it's spectacular out there. It really is.
Yeah.
I think, you know, as hot as the Hamptons has been for a long time, I think you're going to see a big swell in the North Fork in the next 10 years, which is good for business.
Absolutely.
But it's not going to feel like it did, you know, 10 right. years later. All right. Let's talk. We're talking to Gabriella Macari. Gabriella is part of her family winery, Macari Vineyards, out on Long Island. Let's talk about Macari Vineyards specifically. We know a little about what's going on in Long Island, the soil, the weather, all the other stuff. So you said you have 500 acres. How much of that is planted to grapevines?
It's about 180 planted under vine.
Is that one of the larger wineries as far as acres planted to wine?
Yeah, I believe, to my knowledge, it's the second.
Okay. You know. And let's talk about varietals. With that much land, you said to me earlier, your dad loves Cab Franc.
Right.
You know, he could experiment with that. What are the major varietals and wines that you guys are growing?
Sure. So Merlot, Cab Franc, Cabernet, Malbec, Petit Verdot, Sauvignon Blanc, and Chardonnay. And my father loves champagne, so he planted Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, which are super exciting,
right.
and we're so lucky to have those vines planted. We planted a little bit of Gruner. We have an Austrian friend as a winemaker.
That's funny.
And
Riesling,
you know,
said, right?
We don't have any Riesling.
You don't?
No, you know, the climate, you know, it's a grape more suited to the Finger Lakes.
And right.
It
but you're telling
really well
me Gruner will grow and Riesling won't?
You know, for fun, I think we planted a little bit, and we'll see what happens. A little bit of Friulano.
You brought in a couple of wines, and we're going to taste it during our weekly wine sip, but we cracked open a bottle of Cab Franc, which you brought in because you thought it would be fun for us to taste. Just tell me quickly about the wine we're drinking.
Sure. What I love doing, I love saving as many reds that we can and holding them back. And this vintage 2008 Cab Franc was held back for a friend for a restaurant, and the restaurant closed, and we got really lucky because it evolved so well. And I think people all over the world drink wine way too young.
Sure.
No one ages anything. So if you could sort of like employ the Rioja model and age it for them and age it in the cellar, I think that's beautiful. So we are starting to hold back on some of our reds so that we can host events and sell more to our wine club. We've been doing library wines. Anyways, this is the 08 Cab Franc.
100% Cab
100%
Franc?
100% Cabernet Franc.
Estate grown?
All estate grown.
Okay.
All of our wines are. And you know, there's a little bit more new wood here than we were using.
It's
a lot
not,
of more. You don't get it.
It's not a oaky, woody wine. I mean, it's
right.
You know, I've been a naysayer on Long Island wines because I always say life is short. You know, if you're not going to live forever and you're going to drink a bottle of wine, you know, drink a Bordeaux or Burgundy. Don't screw up.
My dad says that too.
You know, but that's not fair. That's why I have you on. And this wine happens to be terrific. I would drink this wine anytime.
That's so funny.
And I think one of the nice things you did is you held it back so that when it goes to the market, it's aged. And
right.
I think it shows people that Long Island wines that are made well will age. I think one of the important things about Macari, and I need you to talk about this a little, is there's sort of this holistic, biodynamic approach, sustainability to farming. That's a big deal. So tell me what they're doing, how long it's been going on. There's animals running around the place.
Yeah, that's a crazy place. When my father first started planting, my brothers and I were young, and we were hanging out in the vineyards and driving four-wheelers, and we were always out on the farm every single day, and people would drop off, like, chemical, you know, brochures and tell him he had to spray these really dangerous chemicals
right.
in order to survive, and everyone does it. This is what you should do. And he, you know, and then they'd be like, but you can't be in the vineyard for, like, 2 days. And my dad would be like, I don't want to do this.
So doesn't sound right to him.
Didn't sound right to him, and he didn't want to do it, you know, because of us, a lot of, the biggest reason. And he found Alan York, who sadly just, you know, recently passed away, but he's a consultant and was a consultant in California, and he came. I can remember Alan so clearly, and just super passionate, and started a composting program with us. And we bought some cows, and you know, we were making 500 and 501 all these biodynamic crazy preparations, and we still do. And my father thinks it's why our fruit, you know, is awesome.
I think he's right.
And You know, we're
I
not
think
certified.
If you're not overplanting, but you practice.
We practice, and we're not certified. I don't know if we ever could be because we're so large.
Right. And, but biodiversity means rich soil, and
right.
rich soil means good fruit, and I think you've seen the payback on that.
100%.
I mean, you don't, even though you're not certified, you don't deviate from it really, right?
We don't deviate it. And, you know, even more with, like, with me just, like, reading a lot more about biodynamics, I think that, like, we really want to get back into doing more. I mean, it's prevention, right? So
right.
it's preventing certain things, and your vineyard can get stronger. And I think, you know, everything in moderation, sure, but...
Right. So quickly, because we're going to take a break soon, and I want you to answer my wine list, because I want your take on a bunch of things. There are, we talked about varietals. There are multiple bottlings. I mean, you make Bordeaux blend mm-hmm. cuvées. You make blended whites and reds. Mm-hmm. What are those called? The Dos Aguas.
Dos Aguas, yeah.
So you make a Bourgogne Rode, which is a higher-end red, an Alexandra, which is not in every vintage
right,
year,
right?
Right,
no.
You make a Dos Aguas white and red.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the whites may have 5, 6, 7 different varietals
yep,
in it.
Yep, that's a new project.
White varietals. Mm-hmm. You make your Chards. You make dessert wines.
I think the core tier really is Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay, Cabernet Franc, and
the
Dos Aguas.
That's the big bottle production.
Mm-hmm, that's every year, and that's sort of like what, you know, I think we started experimenting a lot, and we had a lot of SKUs, and you know, a lot
well,
of people.
Well, obviously,
it's
you
overwhelming.
Didn't
so you
drive your
focus.
Dad too crazy because he made a Cab Franc cuvée after you, right?
Oh no!
I would assume
no.
the Gabrielle is yours.
I don't know anything about that wine.
All right, so we'll talk about Mercari's website and all that tasting room. There's a huge tasting room that's open. We'll get to that in a few minutes. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're talking to Gabriella Mercari from Mercari Vineyards. When we get back, we're going to have her answer the wine list. You're listening to The Grape Nation on Heritage Radio Network.
I'm Mike Colomeco, host of Food Talk on Heritage Radio Network, and I'm here with Bob Moore, founder of Bob's Red Mill, as well as Ray and Tom Williams, who've worked with Bob for years and co-own an organic farm in eastern Oregon and Washington. Ray, Tom, why is organic farming so important to your family?
It's all a matter of the soil is a source of nutrients. You increase organic matter of the soil, you increase the water holding capacity. Water is becoming increasingly scarce. So in terms of sustainability, we don't think it's the only answer, but it's one answer, and it's the answer that we're trying to pursue.
It's been a challenge, and it's been fun, because it is different, and we're learning how to do it for the last 10-plus years.
We're not just doing organic, we're doing organic to high standards.
Bob, why did you choose to partner with Ray and Tom?
Oh, goodness. Well, because they're the best farmers in Oregon, and they're close, and they have a bunch of acres, I think about 10,000, over in eastern Oregon and Washington. They're wonderful farmers, and their family have been farmers over there for many, many years.
It's really important that you have long-term relationships, and we've enjoyed a long-term relationship with Bob's because there are a lot of challenges to organic farming. You simply don't have as many tools as a conventional farmer, and so you have to rely on longer-term solutions.
Knowing that you have a market is absolutely critical. The margins in farming are not that great, so if you grow the stuff and you can't sell it, you have a real problem. And we know with Bob's that we have a market, and we turn out high-quality grains, and they buy them, and it all works well.
Learn more about Bob's Red Mill and their commitment to good food for all at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
Hi, I'm Sherry Bayer, host of All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network, a weekly show dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Tune in on Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear about the incredible careers of top restaurant and hospitality professionals. Plus, on each episode, I tip the show off with a PR tip, feature a speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question, which ties the series together. Support my show and all of Heritage Radio Network's programming. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to become a member today.
All right, we're back. We're back with my guest, Gabriella Macari from Macari Vineyards out on Long Island. I now want to subject Gabriella to our weekly wine list. And I want you to answer this thinking about two things. New York City, which you spend a lot of time in, and Long Island, which you also spend a lot of time in. So the first question is, what are you drinking now? What is Gabriella drinking now? And not the 2008 Cab Franc, but are you obsessing on something? Are you testing things? Are you trying? Are you loving something? Are you seasonal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kelly and I have been drinking a lot of sparkling for the past couple of years. And
Petnat? Sparkling?
Yeah, we made a sparkling Cab Franc, and it was supposed to be traditionally discords. We called it Horses, and it's doing really well. We only make a couple hundred cases, and it flies in the tasting room, sparkling Cab Franc.
Okay.
And I was inspired, actually, by wine I tasted in Brooklyn at Diner. We love sparkling, and okay. I think that I've been tasting a lot from...
But sparkling wine,
well,
like cava, champagne,
yeah.
All that
so
stuff.
So much champagne.
I love champagne. It's the most underrated wine. Okay, so you are drinking sparkling, and you are drinking champagne, cavas, you're drinking...
I had an English sparkling last
night.
That was outstanding.
Yeah, that's starting to come around.
Mm-hmm.
All right, tell me your... favorite wine and food pairing?
So funny. I guess from working with Spain, I always have this incredible moment when I drink a fino paired with any sort of tapas. And I think I love sherry.
So fino, sherry?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I think that pairing
is... fino is sherry. Fino is a type of sherry.
Right.
What type is it? A dry, an old?
Yeah, so it's dry. And
it's aged?
It's biologically aged in a cellar.
All right. And what do you like that with?
Any top. I mean, I think like pan con tomate and like manchego.
Okay.
I think that just brings
cheese,
back such
tapas.
Good memories about Spain. And
good call on that. Good call. A fino sherry
obviously
with tapas.
So cliche. Champagne and anything.
Well, yeah. I mean, we get champagne pizza, champagne fried chicken, champagne popcorn.
Right.
But I'll take your fino and tapas answer. All right. Give me your favorite wine restaurant and or bar. Give me one or two Long Island and New York City.
Wow.
Brooklyn. I mean, you know.
We always have an awesome time, my family and I, at 18 Bay on Shelter Island.
18 Bay?
18 Bay.
On Shelter Island.
Chefs that cooked in the city.
Okay. I mean,
really delicious.
I would guess
awesome
you're
food.
Probably right.
Good
wine service.
Really
selection.
Phenomenal. Good selection. Lots of local. And I think that's important, you know, for the North. When you come to visit, you can't visit every winery. And I don't encourage that. I really actually encourage only one or two a day because I think you forget where you go.
Yeah.
And I think that what they do there is, you know, you can taste other wines. And I think that's really
same
beautiful.
Same thing with Napa. Can't hit every winery, but you go to a restaurant and you can sample. All right, what about, you got a favorite wine skewing restaurant or bar in Manhattan, Brooklyn?
Oh, wow. Danny Meyer supported us from the start, and I think that you cannot go wrong on any Danny Meyer
list. Is there any one place that got heavier into it? Was it Gramercy
Modern? North End Grill supported us like crazy. And I think that, you know,
Jeff Taylor is there now. Yeah. He's coming on the show in about a month.
Awesome. Even 11 Madison sit at the bar, and they were the really first people to promote New York. And that was so, I cried. When they put us on the list, I started crying.
That's a good restaurant.
And that was Dustin. You know, it's just like really humbling.
Right, so those are good ones. What is Gabriella's favorite all-time wine? Does anything stick to you, resonate, change your life, got you into it?
Sure. My dad has an incredible cellar, and he makes it sure that none of my brothers and I develop a cellar palate. that means just like really only tasting your own wine. And my sort of like the first wine I remember thinking this is incredible was Dagonoff, so a Sauvignon Blanc from the Loire Valley, and that wine has evoked such an emotional response every time I taste it, even now. It's limited, it's expensive, but
so
it's
so what
just,
is it? It's
a Sauvignon Blanc from the Loire Valley.
Right. It's a Loire Sauvignon. Dagonio, you said.
Yep.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I would say that has to be
good choice. All right. Now answer my last question. best wine around $15, $15-$20. I need a red. I need a white. I'm going to force you to the Long Island edition.
Okay.
So I want you to give me, let's promote Long Island. Can we get a red and a white, $15-$20? That's good?
Yeah, I think that's sort of like the starting point.
Let's start with varietals and then give me Macaris.
Okay, sure. I no doubt Sauvignon Blanc.
You can get for 20 or under.
Yeah, 15. It's about 20.
Okay. On multiple Long Island wineries.
Exactly.
And then you make a Macari Sauvignon Blanc. Yep. What's the retail ticking off?
So
for?
That's 24. It's a little bit more expensive. Okay. But if you're a wine club member,
okay.
You get a discount.
You get a little. Okay.
But, you know, and red. Cab Franc is more expensive. It's super limited. It spends time in the cellar.
For a cheap red.
I think, you know, a Merlot, an everyday, okay. Juicy.
Are there $15, $20
yeah,
Merlots
no, sure.
on Long Island?
For sure. Okay. Absolutely.
Okay. So we're looking at a Merlot, and we're looking at...
I mean, I would say red blend, though, because I do like when they're blended.
$15, yeah. $20.
There we go.
Don't go off the chart. All right, so that's Gabriella's wine list. All right, our last segment of the show is our weekly wine sip. Every week, we taste a different wine on air. For our weekly wine sip this week, I asked Gabriella to bring in a few wines to taste. And we are currently tasting the 2008 Vintage Cab Franc, 100% estate grown, that you held back and is available through the vineyard, right?
So limited base. We just released a couple bottles to our wine club. And, you know, we have a couple, probably like 6 or 7 cases left. And it's
so let's talk about it. Quickly, and then I want to do the soft blonde. So it's a deep purple on the color. The nose is fairly classic Cab Franc. It's not overly vegetal or bell peppery. What do you get on the nose?
I get a ton of sort of that herbaceous character, but I love the red fruit, raspberry,
the red
cherry.
Fruits come out.
It's super red. Yep. We've opened it for about, you know, an hour. It's evolving.
Yeah. All right, let's throw it over the tongue, and let's talk mouth, feel, and palate.
So most of our wines have a medium body.
And I'd say medium, medium plus. Mm-hmm. Not a glycerin-y, thick,
no.
Nice mouth feel.
We only get those full bodies in really hot years, and I think that's the beauty of Long Island. We can have this, like, moderate overall body, and the acidity's high.
That's
what we love.
What do you get on the palate? You get those red fruits.
Again, same, yeah. Like lots of red.
Yeah.
You know, and we were talking about this earlier, the tannin's so integrated because
I think
spent
a
time
9-year-old wine, yeah, which is the beauty. You drink a young Cab Franc from Long Island, the tannins may not integrate.
Right.
Here's an example. Treat yourself to a bottle of wine like this and see how Long Island can age. All right, what do we think pairs well with this?
The classic is the Long Island Duck, Long Island Cab Franc.
Is that a classic pairing?
Sure, yeah, a lot of
the
chefs.
The sauces and
right.
The fat holds up to the Cab Franc.
A lot of
Franc
chefs
and
go that route.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I know you like this wine. I always ask my guests because I usually bring in a wine and, you know, sometimes we'll blind test. Sometimes we don't like it. Sometimes I know you like this wine. I just want to say that I love this wine. I'm impressed with the ageability. It's a delicious wine. It's very drinkable. It's complex. So kudos to that one. All right, we're going to quickly taste another wine. We're going to taste a 2015. You want to pour?
Sure.
While I'm talking? A 2015 Sauvignon Blanc. So it's the current vintage on the market.
You just released a 16.
Right. You just released a 16. And Sauv Blanc is an important wine. At Macari, right? All right, so let's give this a sniffy. So the color is kind of a light color. It's a light Sauvignon Blanc. The nose has, to me, subtle Cab Sauv notes, not the overpowering citrusy.
Oh, subtle Sauvignon Blanc notes, yeah, and that's what we love. You know, we're somewhere. Everyone's like, do you compare your Sauvignon Blanc to New Zealand or to Sancerre? And For us, it's more Sancerre. It's right. not specifically that, but it's restrained
less,
right, and elegant.
Less grassy.
Exactly, and that's what we love. And for me, I get a ton of grapefruit, and I think that that, you know, there's a lot of salinity, and I think that the acidity is high, and that's what
we're only talking nose right now. You're jumping ahead of me. We didn't even get to mouthfeel. All right, so that's the nose. Let's give it a sip. Let's talk about mouthfeel first. So I get good attack of acidity right out of the shoot. Nice. It's alive. I get that citrus. I get the grapefruit, the after taste, the lingering taste, a little grapefruit. What else?
I just think it's alive and it's delicious. I think, you know, at the end of the day, if a wine is delicious and you come back for another sip, that's, you know, that's the beauty
this
here. And
is
I think
a
it's definitely
summer.
Another, yeah.
Now, you just said it less than 2 minutes ago. If you're into that New Zealand grassy, citrusy style, this is a more restrained French style. So, you know, your choice. You can go out and buy it. But if that's what you like, you know, this is a delicious wine. The mouthfeel on Sauvignon Blancs are usually what? Medium-ish?
Yeah,
light
I mean,
to medium?
Most Sauvignon Blanc doesn't spend time in oak. It's fermented right. stainless. We actually bought some concrete eggs, so we're fermenting in concrete now, which we love. And we, you know, that creates more of a texture and a mouthfeel because there's right. gradual oxidation. But here, this is stainless steel. It's really crisp, really light body.
Very crisp. Mm-hmm. What do we pair this with?
I mean, oysters, salads. I think like lighter fare on its
when
own.
You say
aperitif.
Salads, like lettuces, romaines,
vegetables.
All that stuff.
I mean, you
it
can
pairs
greener,
well with that.
Yeah,
stuff.
Exactly. Gruner okay. and vegetables, classic. But I think Sauvignon Blanc works too.
But shellfish.
Sure. Absolutely.
Lobster, shrimps, oysters for sure, right? All that stuff, which is very prominent on Long Island. So I like this wine a lot, too. For some reason, this past weekend, I was drinking a lot of New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs. And boy, were they over the top.
Yeah.
It's a treat to drink this and have good acidity, which is great with
right.
food and, you know, a more restrained. And not restrained in the negative way,
right.
but, you know, just the style. So that's the 2015 Sauvignon Blanc from Mercari. There's the 2015, the 2016, which are available now. We also tasted the 2008, a sort of cellar selection vintage, which is available. Cab Franc, which is Gabriella's dad's favorite. And we like both wines. And Gabriella also brought in a Syrah, which we talked about. We didn't taste it, but the family is starting to look at Rhone varietals, and there's a Syrah there. We'll get to all the information, but we're going to wrap up the show. And if you have a question, a wine happening, or event, hit me up at sam@thegrapenation.com. That's Sam at the Grape Nation. Follow us on Facebook at The Grape Nation. We'll post Gabriella's wine list answers on the site. We'll also talk about the wines that we drank, so you can get more information on that on the weekly wine sip selections. You could follow us on Instagram at SBenRuby and Twitter at JustBenRuby. And check out our new website, www.thegrapenation.com. You'll see a photo of the beautiful Gabriella. You'll see her wine list. You'll see the wines and any background information. There's tons of info. And Gabriella, now talk to us about two things. Where we could follow Gabriella on social media.
Oh, I'm basically on at Mercari Wines all the time,
okay.
which is our account. And,
okay.
And we have a pretty active Facebook page, Mercari Vineyards. And,
Mercari Wine yep. on Instagram?
Yep.
Mercari Vineyards on Facebook?
Correct.
Okay. So keep that in mind. And if people want to get more information on the winery website?
Yeah, our website has my email, has all of our contacts, and, you know, everything's there for sure.
Okay. So you can go to
MercariWines.com.
MacariWines, MacariWines, wines.com, one long word. And you can get all the info. You can order wines on the site. You can join the wine club. You can get tasting room hours. Mm-hmm. If you want to get married at a cool place, you can go there. And you know what? Who cares? You can yell at me later. Ask for Gabriella when you call them. She'll help you out, all right? I'm out of here after this show. You're stuck with her. So no, but really, I mean, Gabriella is that much involved in the company and all of that. before we shut down the show, I just want to make a pitch for our summer membership drive. As you may know, the show is only possible thanks to member donations. We would literally not be able to reach you every week without the generosity of our HRN members around the world. And now is your chance to join the club, because the HRN summer membership drive is back. Becoming a member is so easy and comes with limited edition swag like T-shirts, drink koozies, pins that you can put on your jean vest. You can sign up for a one-time donation or become a monthly sustaining member by visiting heritageradionetwork.org/donate right now. Let's keep food radio and wine radio on the airwaves this summer. So please take a few minutes. Maybe when you're drinking a lot of wine, write an exuberant check, or maybe don't buy that bottle of wine and take that money and become a member. I want to thank our guest, Gabriella Macari from Macari Vineyards on Long Island. Thank you to our engineer, Vitor, and everyone at the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sam Ben Ruby, and you've been listening to The Grape Nation.
Listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.